My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio.
Happy Friday. Welcome to our Friday casual behind the scenes.
I'm
Tracy B. Wilson.
I'm Holly Fry. Excited it's Friday.
Yeah, it is Friday in the day that this episode is coming out. We're in a little unusual situation in this particular Friday behind the scenes, which is that the thing that we are going to talk about in the second half of this week's behind the scene at this moment is a total mystery. Because we haven't recorded it yet or figured out what it's going to be about.
Yeah, we will.
So in 5 minutes or so, you will know more than we know currently about at the moment we're recording this. Holly, did you ever take home ec?
You know I did not.
Yeah, I know because you told me and then we saved this conversation for now. So I'm about to learn along with you all listeners.
Okay, so I grew up in a very sewing family.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was an assertive woman. And I had watched my two older sisters. My siblings are older than me by a significant amount. They're all clumped together, and then I'm like the second marriage baby. And so I had watched my older sisters take home ec, which often resulted in my mother marching down to the school to yell at the teachers about the stupid things they were teaching her children, how they wasted fabric, how they didn't know how to bake bread, et cetera. And so when it came time for me in junior high to decide whether or not I wanted to take home ec as an elective, there was a brief but very clear conversation with my father of, please don't put the family through this again.
Oh, goodness. I kind of love this story.
Well, and I have to say, like, for me, because I started sewing when I was three, so, like, by the time I was like 5 and 6, I was like begging neighbors for their like fashion magazines and trying to make copies of dresses for dolls out of them. Mm-hmm. So like by the time I got to the age where I would have taken home ec, I wasn't really cooking because my mom didn't like other people in her kitchen messing it up. But I was already sewing way past what they were going to teach me.
Oh, sure.
And they're like, make a pillow that looks like a computer. Like that was not going to do anyway. So I kind of like even potential skirmishes aside, if I actually looked at the coursework, I was like, this is not interesting to me anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, it was a please save us all the trouble of having to talk down your mother and potentially school administrators from a fight.
Sure, sure. I also did not take home ec because I also grew up in a sewing household. Like my mom had taught me to sew from the time that I was small. And I also had spent the summers, we grew all of our vegetables. And so I had also spent summers helping can and freeze and otherwise prepare food that we were preserving for the rest of the year. Like that had been just part of my upbringing. And I was in 4-H, and 4-H, I don't know about now, but 4-H, when you're a girl in the 1980s, when you're a girl, is a lot of home economics focused stuff. Like I had a whole lot of 4-H stuff that was about sewing and was about cooking. And I took a lot of courses that were part of the whole 4-H experience through the Agricultural Extension Service that we talked about in the episode. We would go down to this place that had a more formal name, but we called it the Ag Building. And it was the building where like all the extension classes and things were taught. And so like I had had a lot of both casual home instruction and more formal instruction that was related to what would be taught in home ec class.
Home ec had nothing for you.
Yeah. So I took shop. Shop also had nothing for me because the school was so afraid that we were going to hurt ourselves that we weren't allowed to use any of the power tools.
Mm. Oh, no.
Yeah, it was not a good experience. I did want to share something with listeners that I already shared with you, Holly, as I was researching this episode, which is the September 28th. I wrote 2019. That's not correct. It was a 1929 New York Times article titled "Expert Adopts a Baby." And the first sentence, I mean, I went on a journey with this article, which is three paragraphs long. The first sentence of it says, "Dr. Louise Stanley, chief of the Bureau of Home Economics of the Department of Agriculture, has adopted a baby girl, following the example set by her friend and housemate, Mrs. Mabel Walker Willebrandt, a few years ago." So that sentence caught my attention because sometimes in things like news articles and obituaries and stuff like that, when someone is described as a friend and housemate, sometimes that is code that they were really a couple.
Yeah.
And so that I was like, sometimes it's not code, but sometimes it is. And so like that kind of caught my eye. And then it goes on about their house being on 18th Street and Annabelle Matthews also living there, with the three women being nicknamed the Brain Trust. And how when Mrs. Mabel Walker Willebrandt moved to the house she had just purchased in Georgetown, they wanted to still have a child in the house. And then the last sentence of it was, Nancy comes from the University of Iowa, where she'd previously been a practice baby from earliest infancy. And then I was like, hold up, what's a practice baby? I went on just a whole voyage with this one thing. And I was like, okay, the fact that this article uses the word practice baby in this context, like it's clear that that's a common enough term that everyone would have known what that meant. So I was like, I'm gonna have to look into this. And I'm currently looking into this. We may be about to seamlessly transition into a behind the scenes Friday about practice babies. You'll be surprised or not. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm scared of the practice baby episode.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know.
It will reveal what a monster I am even more than already. Because I'm like, please don't give me a practice baby.
Yes.
My hat's off to parents, but that is not a space I should be in.
Yeah, just because of the strange way that our show works in regards to time sometimes. People listening to this episode, they will already know what Wednesday's episode was about. So this is not be surprising anymore. But you're seeing it unfold as it all happens. So the first half of this behind the scenes episode was recorded an entire week ago, and we talked about not knowing for sure whether an episode about practice babies
was going to happen.
Obviously it did.
Yes.
Everyone got to go on that journey with us. Something I didn't get into in the episode, but that I found when doing research, is that from time to time, these would become sort of like public interest news stories where the local paper would talk about the new practice baby at the at the home ec program, they tended a disproportionate amount of the time to happen when the baby was a boy. And some of the ways that they talk about it is gross. Like, there is just a weirdly titillating, sly underthread of what a lucky boy with all of these young, attractive college girl mothers. And I did not enjoy reading that.
No.
Which is why I did not have any of it to be read from in the episode.
I mean, that still happens.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, have you ever been at, like, a big group gathering or, like, I don't know, a shower or something? I don't go to many showers because I'm kind of a monster, but where there's, like, a predominantly women group and someone has a small child that is a boy. And they do the same language happens about, oh, he's going to be a ladies' man and he loves having it's like, what are you talking about? He's a kid.
He's a baby. Yeah. And I've definitely had friends who have talked about the way other people talk to and about their babies and are like, no, he is not flirting with you. He is a baby.
Like, he is a child who is fascinated by strangers.
Yeah. Another thing that we did not really get into is that, like, I absolutely understand how people can find the whole idea of this as just innately horrifying, and have concerns about whether being cared for by so many different people who were students was harmful. But a lot of the research that was being done into mothering and parenting at the time, like, a lot of it, there were valid results that still hold up today. But a lot of this is also time when research was being done that was used to suggest that basically anybody who was not neurotypical in some way, that it was because their mother had done it wrong.
Right.
Like, this was the same window of time when there was a lot of discussion that, like, autism was caused by bad mothering. And there's just so much to unpack with that kind of sentiment. Like, it's ableist for one thing. It's ableist and it's sexist at the same time. But that kind of mindset was informing all of this concern. And so, yeah, the things that I was the most horrified in all of this was the part where children were in deprived circumstances where they had anemia and rickets and were not being cared for. That to me was a lot more horrifying than the idea of being cared for by 16 women in sequence over a period of weeks.
Right, with, like, supervision involved.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is some continuity to it, which we didn't really talk about a whole lot, right? Like, they're non-continuous people, but presumably if there is one proctor, supervisor, whatever, involved in the process, there is a degree of consistency.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't really get into this part of it either, but in some of the things that I read that were, like, manuals about starting practice baby programs or discussions of how the programs worked, like, the person who was considered to be ultimately responsible for the care and well-being and safety of the baby was not a student. It was the faculty advisor that was part of this whole process.
Right.
And then it also made me think about all of the ways that people learn by practicing on actual living human beings. Like I used to do when I lived in Atlanta, my primary care doctor was at a teaching facility that was part of Emory's residency program for primary care doctors. So I had so many different normal but also uncomfortable and invasive exams. Like, I had a number of PAP exams by people who were students, and in one case by a student who I'm not sure had ever held a speculum. And, like, it's sort of part of how learning works. And I guess the difference between that and practice babies was, like, I consented to being examined by students, and babies are babies and cannot give consent.
Right. You had agency in that whole process.
So anyway, like, I absolutely understand how many feelings this brings up with people.
Oh, yeah.
But the things I was angriest about were the things that were about babies being forcibly separated from their parents because their parents weren't married, and
right,
and institutions where they were not getting sufficient care and love.
Yeah, it puts me in mind a little bit. And again, I am not a parent nor an expert in child rearing, but there was a while back when we were still, you and I were both working at How Stuff Works in an editorial capacity for the articles that were going on the website. And I was co-editing a bunch of articles that were about parenting styles. And mm-hmm. there was one that really stood out to me because this was kind of at the time when a bunch of different parenting styles were commonly being discussed, argued over, et cetera, in the news, like whether being a tiger mom or being an attachment parent or blah, 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 any of those various sort of parenting trends were worthwhile or not. And there was one particular piece of research that had come up in an article I was co-editing where their summation was kind of like, really, as long as the parent loves the kid, that's kind of the determinant of yeah. success. Yeah. And so if a child is getting love, they're probably going to be okay, even though there may be variations and some may respond to different situations better than others. But like, overall, everybody has some neuroses and like, the,
right.
it was kind of like the best you can hope for is that a kid is loved and cared for. And I was like, oh, that's a very simplified way to put it, but it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's some complicated social history. Somebody, I was talking about this on Twitter and how some of the very horrified articles that I had read that were, you know, written within the last few years and were for, you know, just a general audience, had taken a horrified and kind of angry tone about it from the start. And some of them were like, and no one ever researched how any of these children came out. And like, that's not actually true. We talked about some of the research that was done, and I was tweeting about that, and somebody asked me, like, were these kids okay? Like, and I was like, yeah, that's, it really seems like most of them were not harmed, and probably it was a better situation than they had been in. And it reminds me of the incubator babies, which I mentioned at the top, because people would be horrified today if you were like, we're going to have these babies in incubators at a carnival sideshow.
Right.
But at the time, that probably saved their lives. So,
here is my greatest disappointment after doing this episode.
Oh, okay.
No one has started a metal band with the name Mothercraft. That's all I could think of the whole time.
That feels like a good place to end the discussion. Send us notes. Send us emails. Like we said in the episode itself, we are planning a Q&A episode. And that's only going to work out if we get good questions to talk about. So historypodcast@iheartradio.com. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.